What is community? How do you find it, join it, build it? It's more than just showing up to a bake sale with brownies made from a box and then leaving, though I've done this many times. Is it bowling clubs with awesome matching shirts? What about hot but festive street fairs where you spend too much money and never have a real conversation? How do you build community? You're listening to Building Noble Hearts. I'm Margaret Watts Romney. Today, we examine one community and the many gears that had to click to bring it about. Throughout this season, we're speaking with people whose lives have intersected the work of humanitarian violinist Shinichi Suzuki, and we're finding themes of good teaching everywhere. Themes like accountability, trust, and inclusion. To answer my questions about community, I had a conversation with someone who has built a remarkably strong and unified music group. Clara Hardy started with relationships that were very dear to her, but among a population that hadn't had access to Suzuki teaching before, the families that were regulars of the Capuchin Soup Kitchen in Detroit. Clara Hardy grew up in a
community in Marquette, Michigan,
amidst the quiet surroundings of the Upper Peninsula. Violin was an integral part of her family from an early age.
I started playing Suzuki violin at age 5. My mom took me to lessons, and she also actually traditionally got lessons too as the home teacher. And she made it through Minuet 1 in Book 1, which, looking back now, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. She also took me and my sister to Blue Lake Suzuki Family Camp, and we went to Stevens Point. The Suzuki community in Marquette, Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, was pretty small, but it was a community, and we did have group class once a month at a local church basement. And when I was 16, I was able to go to Europe with the Blue Lake International Youth Orchestra. So that was one of the first times realizing that music could give me a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't otherwise have.
Clara's passion for the violin was surpassed only by her passion for social activism. As a child, she not only played music, but also participated with her parents' local and global community building.
My parents were always involved in local politics, writing letters to the editor, host meetings in our living room, keep the local elementary school open, elect school board members, founded a peace camp for kids, learn about working with people from different backgrounds, sang peace songs every morning. To begin camp, sisters and I would bring our violins sometimes.
In these formative years, Clara developed a rich relationship with her instrument, but was also exposed to the larger world, a world of acceptance, connection, and integration. One particular trip with her parents to Haiti really helped cement that passion.
Going to Haiti as a 14-year-old was mind-expanding for me. We stayed on a compound where the hospital was for a couple weeks, and my parents would work in the clinic every day. The three of us would go into the orphanage room. There were tons of cribs. There actually wasn't enough cribs for everybody. I remember there was a changing table, and there were like three tiny babies on top of that. We just played with them every day. There was a seed planted that me and my sisters were supposed to be global citizens.
Clara kept on this path in college as she studied social science theory at the University of Michigan. And after college, she continued her work of social integration by working as an art therapist at the Capuchin Soup Kitchen for 4 years.
And when you're doing art therapy with a child going into really vulnerable places and talking about really real things, I think it's really hard. There's just such a barrier if there's not like an ability to relate personally to what the child is going through right now.
After working regularly with children and families in the soup kitchen with art, she wanted to also incorporate violin.
The moment that I decided to get my teacher training was when I was spending time with one of my friend's kids. His dad had died, and he really liked the violin. And I thought to myself, I can make a difference in this child's life as part of his community by teaching him the violin. As I was in the teacher training, I also kept thinking about the kids that I knew and loved at the Capuchin Soup Kitchen who I saw every day, and I need to figure out a way to make lessons accessible to them.
As she began her training, more and more ideas presented themselves to her about how to incorporate music education into the work she was already doing with her soup kitchen families.
While I was receiving the Suzuki teacher training at Suzuki Royal Oak, I was also being trained by Detroit Future Schools in a transformative education program for community educators. And their curriculum was built on nurturing essential human skills that were necessary for ethical citizenship, collaboration, and creating social change. So that ended up informing my Suzuki approach, and I felt that they were a lot of the time running parallel.
She felt resonance with these training sessions and wove them together as the basis for her own violin studio mission.
And I learned about how Dr. Suzuki started the method right after World War II when he wanted to do something for the kids in his neighborhood, and basically he wanted to bring joy into their lives, and he had one violin, and that's when he started teaching. I think the real reason it was started was to prevent war in the future, to create citizens that would not be interested in that, who would have the ability to collaborate and the ability to communicate with each other and to be creative enough to thrive. And all of the tenets that Dr. Suzuki came up with are to nurture an individual human being. It can be applied to anything in their lives, but it just happens to be using music and the violin as an avenue. For example, parent involvement is intergenerational collaboration, group class. It's about the nurturing of empathy for others and the ability to collaborate with others. Private lessons are individualized instead of having to take the same approach with a whole group of people and not worrying about their unique gifts or ways of learning. Use of review is building confidence in each student when they play the song, and that feeling of confidence gives them the will for mastery, nurtures the will for mastery, so they want to keep going forward.
These ideas and personal values were the fuel behind Clara's passion to create a violin studio in the heart of Detroit. This matches Dr. Suzuki's original vision, as he himself said, "Teaching music is not my main purpose. I want to make good citizens." Clara was passionate, but building this new community had some puzzles along the way.
Because I had been raising my hand during the teacher training all the time, asking questions about, well, how are my students going to get this resource? How are the parents going to get violins? I'm going to have to buy notebooks for them if you want them to take notes. I just was like, this is a need and it needs to happen, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to quit my job, and I'm just going to do this. Actually, I didn't really have a plan, just to be honest.
It was Clara's violin mentor and teacher trainer who invited her to take the leap.
My name is Mark Mutter, and I'm the executive director of Suzuki Royal Oak Institute of Music, and I serve on the board of Detroit Youth Volume. Oh, I think it was an amazing vision and energy. She dedicated just countless hours to that.
Mark helped me get started with 8 students during a violin exploration camp for 1 week. a few months later, we secured space at the Detroit Symphony Orchestra building on Saturdays to begin group classes and private, semi-private lessons. And it was funded by Suzuki Royal Oak parents who made donations for Christmas to support the Detroit youth from the soup kitchen to have lessons.
She had the energy, the dedication, the hours, and the nudge from Mark to build it. But the most important thing she had to build with were her relationships. Capuchin Soup Kitchen families knew they could count on her.
Another part of why this worked is because I already had relationships with the families. It was like, okay, Miss Clara has been here for 4 years. She's not going away. She's gonna be here for me. I can trust her.
Mark also noticed Clara's trusting relationships with the families and saw how important that consistent presence was, especially after working more with Clara and learning about long-standing patterns in society that erode that trust.
What Clara embodied was you have to earn their trust. Because so many times, you know, the one-offs, you know, especially at a soup kitchen, you know, they're dying for help, you know, 300 days a year. And then you get the few weeks during the holidays and Thanksgiving and, you know, Easter where they have to turn away volunteers. The people that use the soup kitchen see through that and are very mistrustful of that for good reason.
Clara showed up consistently, was clear about her vision of an integrated music studio, and built accountability into the foundation of her project. She set those expectations of accountability of herself from the beginning. Her violin families started with drop-in, semi-private summer camps at the soup kitchen, and eventually shifted to committed, year-round private lessons. Now Clara saw she was ready to expect a level of accountability from her families as well.
I ended up having to cut out 7 kids in that year that we made the shift because I realized that if they're not showing up, they're not getting the essential human traits that I'm trying to nurture in them. They're not getting grit. They're not getting the ability to collaborate. They're not seeing themselves succeed. So what am I doing? So that was like an emotional choice for me because they were certain families that I'd known for 10 years and I just wanted to see them every week. And then I didn't get to. And of course I was asking myself, oh my God, did I fail them? What else could I have done to, like, what did I do to make it inaccessible, but I just had to accept that if there's a child who's living in a squatted house and like sometimes a hotel and their family doesn't have a car and they're sometimes they don't have money for the bus and they're basically like homeless, we can't actually serve them. And that that was terrible. I like cried so much when I had to let that child go.
It was a difficult choice, especially when she knew that families where the children may be experiencing violence or food insecurity, there couldn't be the same expectation as a child in a family who has every physical need cared for. There was a famous study once that aimed to examine the psychology of delayed gratification in children. Nicknamed the Michel Marshmallow Test, the idea was that if you tell a small child they can have one marshmallow now or two in 15 minutes, those who control themselves to wait unsupervised for the whole 15 minutes seemed to have more life successes later on. But a more recent study found that the child's choice to have instant marshmallow gratification now was actually more strongly correlated with their background rather than their internal strength. The reasonable choice for some children to eat the marshmallow now was explained by Jessica McCrory in a recent edition of The Atlantic. For them, she wrote, Daily life holds fewer guarantees. There might be food in the pantry today, but there might not be tomorrow. So there is a risk that comes with waiting. Meanwhile, for kids who come from households headed by parents who are better educated and earn more money, it's typically easier to delay gratification. Experience tends to tell them that adults have the resources and the financial stability to keep the pantry well stocked. Despite this tricky territory, Clara found policies that worked for both her and her families.
I think that it's important for us to be successful as a model in this way and to have standards of excellence. We have attendance policies, we have musical development standards for everyone. So it's not just a drop-in thing where it doesn't matter if the kids succeed or not. We're actually trying to impact their lives.
From humble beginnings of a few families in an experimental program, Detroit Youth Volume has grown to be an entire organization of teachers and administrators that work together to serve the families of various backgrounds and needs in Detroit.
I'd be happy to hear whatever you have to ask.
One of those teachers is Ashley Nelson, a Detroit native herself.
My high school teacher really influenced me to, he was just like, you know, you could have a really good career in music. And I was going to do it anyway, but he kind of reinforced that. I went to Wayne State. I got a talent scholarship to go there. And I started off in education, but part of me, which is really funny, and I haven't told a lot of people, I really wanted to perform. I went back and forth. Should I do education or should I do performance? And so a few years down the line, I ended up changing my major to violin performance. I was probably maybe one of maybe three or four other Black people in the orchestra at Wayne State. There weren't a lot. Nobody like really like said anything outwardly, but there were looks and there were like, you know, maybe some surprised glances or things that just kind of made you feel like, hey, oh no, should you be here? Are you serious about this?
Despite the sideways glances, Ashley stuck to her plan to be a musician.
I've always wanted to kind of be a role model for young kids. And I felt like this was a great avenue for me to do that because not only does it involve music, which I love, you know, I'm also able to be interactive and be social and still kind of use all those wonderful things about being a good person and treating people with respect, because there's some disadvantaged youth, of course, here, just like with every like urban city. I want to do something that I know that I've benefited from and see what I can do to be of assistance. And so when she introduced me to the program, I was like, this is a good opportunity, you know, for someone like me to come on in and be a part to just kind of help it grow and just be a part of a good foundation of being in someone that makes a difference in their hometown.
Clara told me about one of the families she was close to from early soup kitchen days and how that trusting relationship they built spread to bring more people in.
I have a student named Ashanti that I have known since she was 4, and she's 14 now. And she's the one who's been in Detroit Youth Volume for the longest. I remember a few years ago her calling me in the summertime. We don't teach over the summer, but she calls my cell phone and wanted me to listen to her play Minuet 2 to make sure that she was doing it right, because she was teaching it to herself, and she was in the car in the driveway, because that was the only place that she could find a quiet practice spot, because she has a few other siblings. So it was just really special to me that it's that important that she's taking everything into her own hands and like finding a place to practice. And she ended up bringing her older siblings into the group. And then she came to me and was like, can Kimari and Kamaria join? I taught them how to play. So she was very motivating to them.
And the received benefits don't stop with the students. They ripple beyond to their families. Take a look at the quotes on the Detroit Youth Volume website from parents.
I think music is an essential part of life. It is universal and soothing to the soul. I want my children in Detroit Youth Volume to help them have structure and discipline. Another one says, when my children practice, I enjoy the blessing of watching them experience something that I didn't. I've also had a parent say to me, I remember at the end of a group class, she came up to me and she said, you know, I think we're going to start practicing more. Because, like, I see how tired you are and how hard you're working, and we're going to start working just as hard. That was just amazing. The parents, they really value that it's a diverse community where their kids are in a room with other kids of all different economic and cultural and racial backgrounds, and it's good for all of the kids. I think Detroit Youth Volume is reflecting the world that all the families want to live in.
The process of creating Detroit Youth Volume wasn't easy and had to overcome obstacles such as the history of negative race relations in this country, as well as how to financially support a studio with many scholarship students. But the lessons we can all take to grow inclusive communities are there. Build a community by nurturing the individual relationships, practice accountability by consistently showing up, and expect an appropriate level of accountability from the community as well. Actually, there's one other way that Clara is growing and bringing more human beings into her community.
And at this point, now that I am pregnant and I'm going to bring my own children into this community, I'm so happy that it exists and it's going to be benefiting me too in a way that I never thought about until the concept of being a mom is becoming a reality for me. Yeah, I almost just cried. I'm so happy I get to bring them in.
Do you have an influential educator in your community, like Ashley, Clara, or Mark, that you would like to recognize? Alice Joy Lewis, Carol Dallinger, and Marion Colby are some of the people who recently had stars named in their honor on the Giving Galaxy of Stars and the Suzuki Association of the Americas website. Go to suzukiassociation.org to dedicate a star, and we may acknowledge them here on the podcast and in our newsletter as well. Would you like more people to hear about building noble hearts? Share this episode on social media or give us a rating and review on iTunes. Every review helps the podcast be seen by more people. We love using music from our community on the podcast. Write to podcasts@suzukiassociation.org if you would like to submit your recordings for consideration. Methuselah Podcast Productions gives us masterful support on our scripts. Sun Up is composed by Stephen Katz and Derek Snyder and performed by the Snyder Cello Army. Brandenburg Concerto No. 6 by J.S. Bach was performed by the Gardiner Chamber Orchestra. Sonata No. 3 in C Major by J.S. Bach was played by Katie Lansdale on the album Celebrating Excellence. Yes is from the album Finding Sanctuary by Anthony Salvo. Tuck and Point and Hickory Interlude are by Blue Dot Sessions and can be found at www.sessions.blue. And Light Row from the album Beats and Strings was played by Detroit Youth Volume. You can find links on our website to all music selections. Thank you for joining us in Building Noble Hearts, and we'll see you next time.